The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 35. So there I was, standing on a branch, hanging over the swiftly moving Humbunga, reins in hand, trying to look calm and persuasive to a terrified camel. How does one look authoritative to a Bactrian beast? I had no idea. I adopted the tone that people generally use for crying children and snarling dogs. I lowered my usual voice and spoke slowly and softly. I suspected that a camel's vocabulary was not large, and so I made no attempt to construct a coherent argument as to why the poor beast should follow me up the tree. I was not even sure I could. I concentrated on getting the thing to trust me. Slowly but surely, I felt like I was winning it over, or perhaps it was the pressure from below. I have no real way of knowing, but shortly, the camel decided to join me on my branch. This it did rather rapidly, and the sudden onrush of the thing frightened me somewhat, and I darted further out on the limb. The thing followed me, and in a trice, however long that is, we were, almost magically it seemed, on the far bank. Surprised and pleased, the camel and I smiled at each other, for the whole thing had proved to be much less of an ordeal than we had both feared. One down, three more to go. The second camel took more persuading, and the thing was not accomplished anywhere near as quickly. This one, Alves, decided that the small gap separating the first branch from the second was not the sort of distance he felt like leaping. Even my pointing to his companion on the far bank, who had made the jump so effortlessly, failed to convince him. What finally did was a sharp poke in the bum with a stick, administered by the resourceful Hobi. This took us to the halfway point with our camel crossing chores. The third camel went across reasonably well, not quite as quickly as the first, or as reluctantly as the second. That left us with one last camel, mine. Hobi decided that for this final beast, I should replace him at the rear, and he should take my place on the branch. I strongly suspect that he had noticed my camel's intestinal difficulties and had no desire to be in the firing line should the stress of the wrangling bring on an episode. If this was his thinking, he was entirely correct. We managed to get her up the short stretch of trunk without too much difficulty, but she was not at all happy, and I thought I heard a low rumbling emanating from her stomach. I was worried about what this might indicate for my future, as my head and right shoulder was wedged fairly firmly against her buttocks. And even though my face was turned away, if she cut loose, it was not going to be good. She started out onto the branch easily enough, but when she saw the gap between the first and second branches, she, like the others before her, balked. She would not move. Even Roger's repeating of Hobie's ministrations with the stick would not convince her. So we gathered all our strength for one final shove, and then with all our might, Roger, Alvy, and I bent to it and pushed. We were rewarded for our efforts with a little demonstration of jet propulsion. The camel made it to the other bank almost without touching the second branch and coming very close to knocking Hobi into the river below. The three of us in the rear swooned at the sudden noxious assault, and realizing that the only safe place to breathe was on the far bank, we hurried after the last camel. We were all now safely across.